This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the show. I am Lee Chui Lin. Submerged cars, floating debris and ruined crops are just some of the havoc brought on by the biggest floods Malaysia has seen in 40 years. With drowning as the third leading cause of unintentional injury and death worldwide, we asked safety activist Captain K. Bala about the business of preparing and surviving deadly floods. Welcome to the show, Captain Bala. I think traffic held you up a little bit, but you're here now.
Yes, good afternoon.
So Pahang and Terengganu were the worst hit during the annual monsoon flood. Are we getting better at responding to these disasters, do you think?
I would say that we can even do it better. We always improvise ourselves, and I think there's always something for us to learn. That's why this year we started with some early intervention and exhibition before the flood. On the 24th of November, we did a flood survival and drowning risk campaign in KL.
Should all residents living in flood-prone zones go through a flood survival orientation program?
If you ask my point of view, I would say that everyone in Malaysia should have some basic knowledge on emergency survival, let it be a flood, fire or anything. But since we have flood every year, then it's important for people to have some knowledge on flood emergencies.
How do you define flood-prone zones? I mean, are these just the areas that we know of that tend to, that tend to flood during rainy season? Or can it happen at any point due to things like pollution or, you know, clogged drains and so on?
Okay, just to say a simple thing, that like if you have a water flow around your perimeter, say, for example, you have a river or big monsoon drain, most probably you will have a flash flood. But those places where they have regularly flood cases, then this one we call it a flood-prone situation where they have experienced before, and they should be better prepared.
So what are the immediate actions that we need to take when there is a flash flood in our, you know, in our immediate surroundings?
Okay, the early warning system. You see, not many people aware about early warning system. The Jabatan Pengarahan dan Saliran has installed such a siren where the water level such a certain level where it's not even a critical yet, but it gives you the early warning siren. But not many people are aware about the siren. And this siren need to be made known. That's why when during our exhibition, we actually turn on this siren a few rounds to make sure people are aware about this baby siren that is going to trigger during the water rise in the drain or a river. And the moment they get this kind of siren, they can actually start to evacuate or prepare themselves for evacuation. So because the water will rush in very fast. It's not like it's going to give you some time to evacuate and things like that. So the early warning system is very important.
And that's something that we all need to take note of.
Yeah, that's the first thing we should need to take note about it. And the other thing is that those people who love to travel, they should prepare themselves, like the vehicle must be able to take bad traffic jam situation, you know, because if there is a water road closure, they're going to stuck in the very bad jam. So they need to have emergency food. And I always tell people they need to have at least a life hammer inside the vehicle if their car submerged into the water, or they can't immediately get out of the vehicle. They need some rescue hammer that they can actually break the glass, because once the power window shut down, they are unable to come out of from the vehicle. From my experience, I remember I responded for one emergency in front of Sheraton Hotel in KL, where a van load of tourists stuck inside the vehicle where they cannot come out, and the water level rise. And the power window cannot be removed, and they can't unable to open the door. So you see, this is our situation. All these transport providers need to be trained, like taxi driver, van driver, bus drivers. They need to be trained. If they're regularly traveling to Kuantan, Terengganu, they have to be better prepared, especially towards the year end.
So logistically, let's keep it basic. What are the essentials that we should bring with us in an evacuation? What are the absolute necessities that we should have on us?
We must prepare our runaway bags, you know, during a fire or emergency. You know, a runaway bags consists of a copy of all the documents, and then we keep our personal document inside the cupboard. But can we put everything into a plastic and seal it? Those they can buy a sealer bag or plastic bag, which they can actually seal it, retape it again, and put it inside a bag. And that bag, they can actually keep some sweets together, some mineral water, a small bottle, no need to be so big bottle. They must have at least a small torch inside there, a whistle to attract attention. and other medical supplies, you know. Their medical supplies need to be put in the waterproof container because they're going to go through river. There's a flood-prone area.
I guess especially for people who have conditions such as diabetes or hypertension.
Right. Yeah. They need to have all this medicine in the medicine compartment. This is our medicine compartment. They can actually purchase it from a camping shops, you know. And or else, at least a film box. Film box is a waterproof, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they can actually keep all this into a film box, you know. Make sure they clean up the film box. Or, worst come to worst, at least in the medicine plastic. The medicine plastic comes with a sealer. That will protect the medicine.
So how much food and water should we pack when evacuating in an emergency flood situation? I mean, I know being Malaysians, we love our food and we want to bring it all with us, but we don't want it to weigh us down either.
Yeah, that's right. So I would suggest that's why during the exhibition, we actually exhibit all the type of foods that will provide enough nutrition for them.
Mm-hmm.
Those cream crackers that actually comes with some chocolates and things like that. Those cream crackers comes with sugar. This will keep them their glucose level in a par.
Sure.
And then also we ask them to carry some chocolates and sweets because those for the diabetics and things like that. You know, they need glucose sugar supply. And this type of food usually comes in a proper seal pack. That means if it accidentally drop in the water, it's not contaminated unless it's already open up or still open, you see. So we want those packet food. I remember one of the politicians actually stopped a truck and actually distributed bread during a flood. You see, during a flood scenario, the car's going to log up jam everywhere. And people need to have enough food inside the vehicle for their children. Everything is there for them, especially when they're traveling towards the Terengganu, Kuantan, that area towards the year end. Especially this school holiday, people love to travel. They like to go back home.
And what should we do when that food and water begins to run out or runs out completely?
Okay, we need to really do a proper food management because we're going to consume whatever we have just to maintain ourselves.
Rationing.
Survive. Yeah, the rationing. And then during this type of situation, there will be a help arrive, but you may find delays in help arriving because I would say that we are not really very well prepared compared to other developed countries, but we are learning. But I would say thumbs up to all the NGOs, you know, Buddhist organization, religious organization that who actually come out and immediately move on and they're very well prepared. I would say thumbs up to all of them because I personally work with many, many NGOs and work together with the local NGOs and international NGOs. I mean, they are very well prepared. They know this is going to happen and this is what we need to prepare from their past experience, you know.
Which is something that we all need to take note of because it's not as if floods are new to Malaysia, of course.
That's right, yeah.
Okay. I'm speaking to Captain K. Bala, safety activist, and we're discussing surviving floods. After this, we will address the key dangers that occur during floods in Malaysia on The Big Picture, BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. This is The Bigger Picture and I'm Lee Chui Lin. With me today, Captain K. Bala, safety activist. We're discussing surviving deadly floods. So what we've established is that you need to be attuned to your emergency surveillance system to let you know when a flood is incoming. You need to have your runaway bags prepared with your medication, with sufficient food. So Captain Bala, let's talk about what some of the key dangers are when it comes to flood situations.
During flood, we will experience power failure. And because of the power failure, a lot of people tend to light up their candles and we can have fire emergencies. So if you really have to light up a candle, then make sure that you have a container, a metal container that you can actually put the candle, light up your candle inside the container and put on water inside there. So just in case if the candle reached the level of the water and it will put off by itself. And then those people who can afford to buy emergency lights, those sell in the night markets, you know, those 15, 20 ringgit, that's good enough to light up your whole house, you know. And then we will have a deadly threat like when there's a flood, the animals will scare. Those little creatures like snake, rats, cockroaches, lizards, they will find ways to escape and they will find your home will be a best place to evacuate. So they will move into your house. So if you come across like this type of wild animals, just get them away from your children hanging around very near to the staircase and things like that. And when you seal your door, if usually what people do, they don't leave their house. They'll go to the level one, the first floor of their house, and then they will. I will recommend that they need to close the door and jam the entrance of the door so that the lizard, the snakes won't find their way to come in, and your children will end up trouble having a snake bites and things like that. That's why on the 24th of November, the last November, we did an exhibition. Actually, in the exhibition, we showed them how to use the snake bite kit. And they can carry a portable snake bite kit, which they can buy from a camping shop. It costs them like 20, 30 ringgit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if they love to travel, they go for fishing, they go for camping, that will be handy as well. We also train them that we also ask those Malaysians who have their pets, like cat, dogs, you know, birds, you know, they usually put them in the cage when they left the home. So, you know, flash flood do always happen, you know, without telling you, I mean, without giving you early
right.
warning. So, preparing the dog cage with some additional mineral water bottle, rope around the cage, may float the cage so that the dog or pets inside won't die.
Okay.
And then these are cheap and very reliable, and those mineral water bottles can usually float 2.5 kg per unit. So if they were to mount, we actually demonstrated all this in the exhibition, and we want people to learn to improvise your dog cage, the
right.
cat cage, you know.
So if you've got a 20 kilo dog, for example, then you might use 10.
Yeah, 10
of those bottles.
Or even more. Or even you can have two life jackets to be mounted to the side of it. I mean, if you want it, it looks better than, you know, the life jacket actually float a person, human capacity, like 120 kg. So you can actually just seal it up together with a life jacket so that, you know, the cage can float by itself. In order not to let the cage washed away, the cage need to be chained together with the solid beam so that, you know, during a flood, the cage will float, the pet will be still inside, and it will not be washed away by a strong current.
So I guess with all of these things, it comes down to planning and preparation, because you obviously aren't going to have, you know, life jackets strapped to your dog cage all the time.
No, if you're in a flood-prone area, you have to be prepared. Say, for example, my experience working in TTD Jaya, very nearby here. When I went there, I realized that there is a kindergarten full of children and need to be evacuated. So this type of kindergarten, which is located in flood-prone area, need to prepare themselves. If there is a heavy rain continuously, what is their action plan? So it's again the BFM, best flood management. So they need to have proper flood management. And then what they need to do, the children life jackets. And I remember I came out in some of the TV programs and I showed them how to make a mineral water bottle doing a life jacket for children using mineral water bottle.
Yeah.
Having three mineral water bottles, you can actually do a life jacket for a child. You know, I was very sad to know that there was a child actually drowned during the flood, as well as last year we have a child actually fell out of boat in Tioman. So if you realize that there is no child life jacket when you travel in the river or sea, or you're going outing, you have to be prepared. You have to get one. And those child life jacket is made available, and it's not costly, about 20 to 30 ringgit you can buy one, you know.
So all that covers, I guess, being prepared for the water, and especially for people who are weak swimmers or just not expecting it at all. But how should we prepare for electrical safety during a flood? Because that's obviously of great concern.
Usually when there is a flood, the power will cut off. So we don't have, we don't have electrocution injury, but we have a problem with people fainting inside the house because it's too hot. And then the water is not subside, haven't subside. The people still wants to stay there. They don't want to evacuate. They say, no, if I leave, somebody will steal my things. If there's anything lost, we can always buy another one.
Yep.
But we lost a life. That could be the worst experience they're going to come across. So I would strongly recommend people to evacuate their home. You know, make sure you lock everything and then you evacuate.
And now, seek safety.
That's right. Your safety is most priority. And then when you have, for example, a certain important documents that you want always to be safeguarded, your photo frames that you hang on the wall, behind the photo frames, you can actually mount a plastic sheet which you can actually put all your things. That is the highest point you can have. And you don't worry, you don't need to hang all with a plastic bag around your house. But at least behind the photo frame, you can actually mount the plastic, flat plastic, which you can keep some of the documents. And how many photo frames you hang outside there? Every photo frame can actually keep some documents behind. And that will actually keep the document from damaging.
Mm. And for people who are awash in these waters, you know, for significant periods of time, I guess there is a certain level of illness associated with that, you know, whether just from contaminated water or, you know, from being in cold water for too long. How do you treat things like hypothermia in the midst of a flood?
Okay, there is a hypothermia blankets made available. It's like a foil sheet. That people can actually use it. Those houses or industry or businesses around a business, a flood-prone area, they should prepare their first aid kit equipped with at least a blanket. If they don't have a hypothermia blanket, they can actually use a normal blanket as well to warm up, to warm them up, you know, to make sure that they don't have reduced in the body temperature drastically, you know.
So, is this then a matter of seeking somewhere where they can lie down, or just, you know, being wrapped in the blanket?
Being wrapped, and make sure they're away from the wet zone.
Okay.
So that's why I said I have one of the experience early last year. We went to evacuate a handicapped lady in Hululangat during a major flood. She refused to come out because she don't come out from her house. So we have to convince, and in order to, when we evacuate everyone, we try to evacuate the elderly first, and then we have to evacuate the mother, everybody, and the child as well. She refused to come. We have to evacuate everyone first because we cannot delay the time. And we left behind a rescuer. When we came back inside there again, we actually convinced the girl again. We putting on a lot of equipments, gadgets on top of her, make her feel very nervous. So we have to handle them very carefully. That's why in my association, I actually have an autism trained rescuer who actually can deal with these type of people. You know, at least if they don't want to come, how do you convince them?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then some of my girls who actually speak sign language because it's very important to communicate with them. So we have to be better prepared.
Of course, because you don't want to just drag people out of their houses.
That's right. If they are in the resident association, residential area, in the residential area, they have Rukun Tetangga, they have RAs. The RAs must have a proper database. How many needies are there? How many elderly couple? How many bedridden people need to be evacuated? All these need a proper planning. The best flood management is very important.
Mm-hmm.
So, for better evacuation, we need to know the proper evacuation plan. And this can be only done through proper planning. So it cannot be overnight. Like during a flood, we cannot ask how many people still inside there. No, we have to make it a very good planning.
And I guess planning is both on a systemic level as well as on a personal level, right? Like the people in the area need to have that plan,
but
the authorities do as well.
I'm not talking about authorities.
Just the people.
Yeah, forget about authorities. We talk about the resident association.
Okay.
If they are in the company management practicing safety, they must include in safety. We don't talk about authorities are additional help that you can get. You know, we have to prepare ourselves, our neighborhood, our row of houses. Then we have to prepare ourselves.
So we talked about hypothermia earlier, but what are the other common diseases and viruses that can be transmitted during floods?
Hygiene matters are the greatest issue because children turns the flood into another environment where they will enjoy it. They will go and swim. They can get into drowning. Drowning is the worst case scenario in the event of flood because you can lose your life. So a basic knowledge on first aid like CPR and things like that are very, very important for those people who are dealing with water emergencies.
Many people are not aware about the dangers of floods because they feel like it doesn't affect them. Is this something that's a misconception? You know, can those living on the west coast of Peninsula Malaysia just rest easy because, you know, it'll never affect us?
I totally agree with you because when I did the flood survival and drowning risk campaign recently, people asked me, do we really need this type of exhibition? Do we really need this type of exposure? And when the flood hit Kuantan and Terengganu, people start to SMS me. They say, hey, I think this program needs to be expanded throughout whole Malaysia.
Yep.
You see, we shouldn't be thinking when there is a flood, then only we do the program. No, we have to prepare. During the time of peace, we have to prepare for a war. So we have to prepare ourselves. You know, if we know we are vulnerable for such a threat, then why don't we move on today? Put it into your SOP. We need to move on. And it starts from family level. That means one family, one planning. One community, one planning. Then talk about the government later. We always ask what the government is going to do, how they're going to evacuate. We don't have a boat. We don't talk about that. We talk about early intervention. How are we going to get out alive? You know, how are we going, where are we going to go? Where is the safest land? I mean, highest ground that we can actually hold on until the rescuer arrive, you know?
And once you're returning after a flood has receded, hopefully to your house that is, you know, that has everything still in it, that is more or less okay, what should one take note of or be prepared for?
Working in the after a flood scenario is something very dangerous. You can't simply bring a children because you have a red urine exposed and things like that. The personal hygiene is so important. So they need to move on when they do the cleaning work. Each time they finish their work, they need to really wash their hand clean and make sure that they consume the food which is not from the flood-prone area.
Yep.
It should be away from the, say, for example, from the other town or something like that. You know, if not, we buy the food that is a dry food and consume. It's not the cooked food because cooked foods are dangerous around the perimeter.
Okay, so basically you will need to probably purchase your foodstuffs from somewhere not your neighborhood.
Not affected by it.
Okay,
yeah.
And I guess just be prepared to clean your house and clean yourself all
That's
the time.
Right,
okay,
yeah.
Moving on, some of the houses affected generally have survived multiple floods, especially in, you know, these flood prone areas that we're discussing. How do you flood proof a house?
You can't really flood-proof your house
beyond
unless your house, you can actually elevate higher. But my association, Malaysian Volunteer Fire and Rescue Association, we invented a little gadget called the flood guard. This gadget is actually mounted on the wall. It comes with a small bar where any of your TV appliances or computers can be mounted on this bar. This bar is equipped with a floater. So whenever the floods rush in, the water rush in, the flood guard actually push away your TV to the higher level.
Okay.
Automatically. So this is still under R&D. I'm really hoping for Mosti's support and other organization to support me to improvise on the gadget. If this gadget is working in a very proper manner, maybe we will start to fix this in some of the flood-prone area to see in the next, in the near future, if there's a flood affected the particular area, can we save the property or not? Because the government is paying tons of money for as a compensation. If this thing can be prevented, I mean, we can install this such a gadget in the flood-prone area, or the developer who develop housing areas, they should prepare all this kind of gadget. I think we may save, we may not save all, but we may save some of the important things. I also want to encourage those Malaysians who buy furnitures if they're staying in the flood-prone area. They have to look for like rotan furnitures, you know, those furniture that they can easily clean, you know, and they can reuse it back because every year they're going to face it and it's going to be like a yearly affair.
Seeing, and as you point out, flooding is an annual event in this country. Do you see any gaps in our government's relief systems and evacuation procedures?
As I'm 21 years in emergency, I see some improvement. I didn't say a major improvement. I see some improvement, but I'm glad that all the NGOs move in to assist.
Okay.
I can say personally, almost every day I can see a PM thanking all the NGOs that move in to give out relief goods and all these things. Even in a very small way, you did a great job.
And again, we come down to personal preparedness, right?
That's
right,
so yeah.
Regardless of what the government has planned, we should be prepared.
We should be prepared, yes.
All right. So for those of us who would like to educate ourselves on the dangers and safety measures to do with floods, where can we go to?
They can keep in touch with us via our website, www.mvfra.org. And I always welcome all the corporate companies. I remember those days, there's a lot of corporate company when they have products which is a slightly defect, like the napkins was not properly stitched or whatever. Those napkins, they actually donated for flood victim. And this can be used, you know, it's just a little defect. So I would like to ask all the corporate company, if someone who's in the decision making, to come forward to support NGOs, you know, prepare ourselves. We have enough place to room all these things. If there is a major flood, we can actually deploy all this sanitization and things like that for them.
Thank you very much, Captain Bala. I've been speaking to Captain K. Bala, safety activist, and we've been discussing how to survive deadly floods on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.